This is the FM Gold channel of All India Radio. In the program News Analysis, now we bring you a discussion on India and Global Hunger Index. The participants are Professor Ash Narayan Roy, Director, Institute of Social Sciences, and Aditi Tandon, journalist.
US-based agency tracking global hunger has yesterday released its latest report, and they've said that India is ranked miserably and poorly among 118 countries that were tracked to see whether people living in those countries are being fed properly or not, and what is the status of undernutrition and malnourishment among children generally, and also among specific populations such as the tribes and other marginalized sections. The report again brings the pending issue of poverty and hunger center stage, because the government has launched a number of schemes. It has even enacted the Right to Food Act. And despite all the measures that have been taken and a lot of schemes being rolled out during the previous UPA government and also during Prime Minister Modi's government, the situation doesn't seem to improve. What do you think is the reason for India's continuous decline on the Global Hunger Index? Can you also throw some light on the irony and the correlation between growth and hunger?
Let me first begin by some light comment, particularly about depending too much on the statistics, because there is a saying that 99% of statistics explain only 49% of story. Similarly, I mean, imagine that if one's head is in the oven and feet in the fridge, on an average, you are okay, but you are dead. So sometimes, you know, statistics have its own problem, but given the fact that this Global Hunger Index has been taken seriously by every country and all that, and that indeed brings out the issue very urgently. And just as you explained that the dichotomy, that here is a country which is the fastest growing major economy in the world, and that being the case, expectations are that the growth will have trickle-down impact. It will have a bearing on status of poor, malnourished and hungry citizens and all that. But that is something which will take time. But one of the factors is the number of people that we have. Even in the case of China, it took time. It is still struggling. But their rate was much faster. Their policy was much better suited, because the kind of polity and system, we know that, I mean, and what China can do, India can't. That is one aspect that, you know, because of the large number and all that. There are many areas in which India has started performing much better. Even if there are a lot of gaps, but you see that thanks to the midday meal or Anganwadi, this is perhaps the only right kind of a meal that children have started getting. It may not be available universally, it may not be in particularly tribal areas or some very backward areas and all that, but that has started improving. But yes, challenge is that we still have a long way to go. And there are various factors, and these factors are that overall poverty, then you have unemployment, safe drinking water, sanitation, lack of effective health care. These are some of the issues which combined together also create difficulties in the realization of the objectives that various policy interventions of successive governments seek to achieve. So I think that, to my mind, is which is creating much of the problem. But the sad part is that, you know, we are slipping, particularly in this case.
You presented a list of factors that could be behind India's poor performance on the Global Hunger Index. The exact position that India has attained out of 118 countries is 97. I was looking at the figures for other Asian countries. And also, when we look at other Asian countries and compare India with them, India hasn't done well on the poverty and hunger index. And India is far behind most Asian countries. For instance, only Pakistan is behind us. The rest of the Asian nations, including China, China is placed at the 29th position. Nepal is 72nd. Sri Lanka is 84, Bangladesh is 90, and Myanmar is 75. We have seen over the years, see, this is not the first time that any global report is showing us the mirror. We know what the problem is, as you rightly pointed out, that it's a combination of factors which is driving India back on this particular indicator. Human Development Index comes year after year, and they tell us where the problem lies. When we assess India's charts, we actually see that whereas we do extremely well when it comes to economic growth and such indicators, But when we factor in the indices for health and education, we are pulled back in the charts. And as you had pointed out earlier, that it has a combination of sanitation, the health status of children and communities. So all those factors, of course, but do you think the issue that health and a lot of such issues are primarily the responsibility of state governments, and in a federal structure there's only this much the center can push and the rest of the responsibility has to be taken up by the states? And recently we know the 14th Finance Commission has allocated many more resources to states, and there is now a very strong fear among development experts that states may not be able to absorb that kind of funding, or they may not be able to spend that fund in a targeted manner. Do you foresee this problem increasing, because a lot of central schemes have now been scrapped and states have to take on a lot of burden? Are they ready?
That's a very good point. Yes, the devolution is a very positive indicator that in a federal setup states have to accept those responsibilities. But even at that time, many of the states pointed out that, look, you expect us to also add certain kind of amount to the cause or to the scheme which we may not be able to kind of generate. Now that brings in the question of, is the center expecting the states too much, or is it a way to say that, okay, we have done enough and all that? No, because I would say that we still need much more money to be spent, both on education, on social sector, as well as health, certainly. I mean, something below 2% health, I think it is unacceptable. Second point is that some of the smaller states somehow are able to perform better. I'm not talking of northeastern states, which are very, very tiny. It's another category. But the small is beautiful is very much the case. So they are able to perform much better. At some stage, it is also a question of the development model, because there are various factors that we have to factor in. GDP growth is important, because unless we have the surplus money, how are you going to do that? And thanks to the overall 7-8% growth, UP onward and up to now, we have been able to spend possibly the largest amount of money on poverty alleviation. Now, it's not that we have not done. So the model of growth is important, because we are going to face newer challenges.
So are you recommending an out-and-out socialist model for development?
No. The idea is that in the GDP-led growth, you have to also ensure that you take care of the right kind of policy which will benefit. You also need to kind of allow states certain incentives, but more than anything else, distribution, equity. These are the issues, because we have a new challenge of sustainability coming from climate change, coming of automation and all that.
So I get your point, what you are trying to say effectively is that maybe the policy makers need to look at the development models that we are pursuing. But as we know that under the Congress-led UPA government, a lot of socialist schemes were initiated and rolled out successfully. We have the best example in Mahatma Gandhi Rural Employment Guarantee Act. It was made into an act. But Professor Roy, there have not been very heartening results from implementation of these programs, and there have been debates around whether the kind of jobs that you are generating through NREGA are actually adding to the quality of life of these poor people, and which is why, you know, this current government has been revisiting the NREGA module, although they've continued with the program, but they're tinkering with it, modifying it to suit the needs of the new times. Because building roads or digging borewells, it was being said that much of that was being done and permanent asset creation was not happening. Where does the center draw the line with the states? How much responsibility are the states willing to take? Because health, for instance, is a state subject. And there are so many laws that the center has enacted which the states have today also not implemented for various reasons. You know, there are political reasons and many other reasons. But coming back to the factors behind poverty and hunger, one big factor would of course be unemployment. We struggled with it for years now, and we've now seen that over the past 5 years we've had a higher rate of unemployment and jobs are not getting generated, although the new skilling initiatives of the BJP government are picking up. But these are long-term measures which will take time to show. On the job front, are there any prescriptions about how to build job economy? Because largely we've been struggling with a jobless economy.
This is a global problem. In fact, I mean, it's not common to India. You see, globally what is happening, including in the West and all that, that you have the job risk. And it has happened because of a variety of factors. The most important is automation and sophistication in the technology and all that. And that is the case. So I think even countries which are overpopulated are, you know, kind of, you know, falling prey to the technological model of growth and all that. I have a feeling that given the fact that India lives in villages and agriculture is in a big crisis, you see the rural distress and all that, we have to also think that there are certain areas in which we have to go slow in terms of ensuring that the kind of jobs that are needed. Because if you are not doing, then you are creating another problem. And unless we create some kind of a roadmap that what are the areas in which, like, too much attention to agriculture is badly needed. That is something which we are not able to. There was a time when we contribute immensely to the GDP. Today its contribution is dwindling every year and all that. No one seems to be interested in the farm sector. That's why you see a large number of migration coming to urban areas and all that. Not exactly what is the model, but then one has to ensure that you have a development model which indeed ensures high growth, but also ensures the distribution of that wealth, creation of jobs, and a mixing of a kind of a technology, high tech plus also the indigenous technology, so that a large number of people get the benefit of that kind of a growth.
So you are talking about models and policies that will enable a smooth transition from the rural and agriculture dominated economy to an urban economy, which is a valid point and that has to be taken care of. But so far as the current global hunger index is concerned, we also have to factor in the issue that India has had drought years. We've had monsoon deficiency for 2 years consecutively. And as we know that 12 states in the country declared drought in 2016 on account of 2 years of deficient rain. And since the Global Hunger Index of this US-based International Food Policy Research Institute comes close on the heels of drought years, naturally it is factoring in the weather conditions. But again, the issue of drought is also not new. We faced drought and we faced floods for years. Are there some gaps in our policy planning that we don't seem prepared enough for these natural challenges?
That's very true, because more and more such calamities we are confronting globally again. Again, the question of climate change and the question of sustainable growth model. I think this is something we have to take it very seriously. I think we have enough evidence to suggest that we are in for that kind of a crisis which is looming before us. And that being the case, we should be better prepared. We also need to have master planning. Somehow, I mean, our approach is that we simply extinguish the fire, and it's a typical reaction and all that. So that being the case, I think one has to have a long-term planning and to ensure that, I mean, when there is a crisis like that, how do you ensure that, you know, people are alleviated? But I wanted to bring in another issue, like, you know, sometimes we also need to learn from the global experience. Coming back to the issue of global hunger, see, the Brazilian model has been far more successful because there are reasons, and I think there is a need to do that. The center of that policy was women. The government said, look, the money will go to women, because women will have to ensure that the child is taken to the school and to the primary health center. Now, that was very important. Number two, it was a PPP model. So public-private partnership. It was also a model where federal, state and local government came together. So I think we may have to innovative ideas and revisit some of these things, including MNREGA and all that, and maybe...
Yeah, absolutely. Well, see, while there are certain things the governments can do, but there are certain things that women alone can do. For instance, the issue of breastfeeding a newborn is something which the government is struggling to make women understand. Mm-hmm. A lot of women still don't do it. 6 months of exclusive breastfeeding can take care of undernourishment among children. So, hoping that lessons will be learnt. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on Indian Global Hunger Index. The participants were Ash Narayan Roy, Director, Institute of Social Sciences, and Aditi Tandon, Journalist. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of All India Radio. This program is also available on our website, news.air.nic.in. You may email your opinion about this program at airnsdtalks@gmail.com.